Welcome to Conversations Around Conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app earlier today. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. This is Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations. It's a podcast to continue that conversation because every week on Clubhouse, Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern, if you want to come hang, we have these amazing discussions with the most brilliant people who sit at the intersection of tech and theater.
We always walk away from these Clubhouse talks with so many thoughts beyond what we had time to talk about. So we decided to get into the podcast world and have a little more conversation around these topics, reach even more of our friends and collaborators. And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesday. This week on Clubhouse, we talked about a couple of really interesting pieces of news: interactive performance dating app experience called I'm So Hot?
Question mark.
Which is a co-production by The Tank, which is an awesome collective here in New York City for theater, New Light Theater Project, and Pocket Universe. We talked about the Broadway League decision to not release any grosses for the 2021-2022 season, and also the white interpreter who went viral for interpreting WAP at Lollapalooza. We have so much to unpack here, and I'm wondering, Joe, would you mind if I don't throw it to you to start?
How dare you?
Please?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. I have a question for you that came out of our conversation today on these topics. So the performance app, I'm So Hot. The conversation we started to have, based on that article in Clubhouse was, what's the definition of theater? Does it matter? And I wanted to specifically kind of ask you some more questions because you don't come from theater.
I love it. Yeah, I'm not the authority on what is or isn't theater, which makes me the authority on what is and isn't theater.
Well, that's not the question I'm going to ask you. See here. So I was saying in Clubhouse that I've been following Jared Mazzocchi on Twitter, who I feel like I talk about every other week here. And he really leans into sort of like trying to publicly speak out against theater folks creating a turf war over the use of this word. Like I'm really sort of fascinated by it because he's always tweeting about it. He's always sort of shedding light on like how a section of our theater community is really anti using the word theater about anything that's digital. It's this huge deal in his world. And the reason I find it fascinating is I, as a human, am like, I don't have time to talk about this on Twitter. I'm just going to go fucking make the stuff. And like, we won't argue. Don't argue with me over words. Like, just make it and you can't argue with me anymore. Right. I don't understand it. The human sort of impulse to argue about language. But I do understand, because I'm a student of theater and it's written about a lot, that language is tied to cultural identity. Right. So that's all to frame up that I'm just really curious what you think, coming from outside worlds, about defending language and words that label things, and how that relates to your opinion about this sort of like big fight that's going on right now about the use of the word theater.
This is so much more fun than just, is this or is this not theater?
In what world would I ask you that?
Oh, no, it just wouldn't happen. You would get the most boring answer, which you're too good of a host and an interviewer.
I didn't mean that at all. Oh my gosh. I actually was just thinking like, I'm so not interested. Again, don't care. You know, I'm much more, and I feel like it's what we do well on this podcast, digging underneath what we're really talking about, you know, I hope. Anyway.
It's funny. I definitely have an opinion. And the funny other part of that is like, I don't know why I have the opinion I have. Like, this almost now feels like a therapy session. It's like, well, let's get into that. Let's dig deeper. Let's see, you know, what childhood traumas underlie why I think and feel the things that I do. But I feel like for as long as I can remember now, I've been in the camp of like, language evolves, mm-hmm. and like language is designed to evolve, and like words are invented to capture and communicate concepts. Like, they themselves are their own art form, but it's about like the interpersonal communication about similar things. I'm literally staring at a jar of peanut butter pretzels. Those are called peanut butter pretzels because they're pretzels filled with peanut butter, and you and I need to be able to communicate about them effectively.
That's actually really true if you're in our office. It all breaks down if we can't talk about the peanut butter pretzels.
Really important stuff. So I've always been of the mind of like, the higher order problem being solved or situation being created, through the invention of words and language is for the, like, the communication between human beings to be as close as possible to the same page about what they're thinking, how they're feeling, and the world and the environment that they're interacting with. So, like, yeah, I feel pretty strongly about, like, words can, will, and probably should change over time as the need for the definition of those words also changes. And so, like, there's one camp, right? So there's one camp in which, like, it's actually super important, using my definition, that theater remains theater, because it's about, like, the communication of what it is and what it is meant to be. And this almost gets into, like, in-group, out-group dynamics, gatekeeping, et cetera.
Sorry, what did you say? In-group, out-group?
Yeah, in-group, out-group dynamics.
I don't know, I've never heard about that. What is that, real quick? Can we sidebar for a second?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like the concept of gatekeepers. You know, there's an in-group that either has some sort of power or some sort of influence that controls or dictates.
Hmm.
And then there's the out-group, who is just like a counterpoint to the in-group. And the eternal struggle is the in-group keeping the out-group out and the out-group resenting and or trying to break into the in-group.
Hmm. Thanks.
Yeah. So is the term theater, like, should it be defended because it retains a certain important structural definition that allows us to properly communicate about what it is and is not? Or should the definition of theater evolve to encompass all of these other things so that we can properly communicate about what is or isn't theatrical, live theatrical performance? Mm-hmm. I want to throw that in there.
Yeah, I was thinking that the whole time. Yeah, that's so interesting, because, like, that, again, going back to something that Emily, I think, said during Clubhouse, and we were talking to our friend SJ from iHeartRadio Broadway. So, like, with all the stuff that's going on, it's not, Broadway is not back. All these theaters, like, we're not. So there's so, we got to keep creating. And I wonder if that just precipitates the deciding of the argument, which is, like, literally we can't even create enough theater as we understand it in the communication of the word theater to keep it in the conversation. So we just, like, have to expand the definition.
Interesting. I'm like, I'm all of a sudden spinning and spiraling on, like, what is the value of defining the thing? Because, like, I see the one side of, like, what has been theater sort of, like, time stamped as, like, the thing that happens on Broadway, whatever, let's just call it that for a second for simplicity, even though it's much broader than that even.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's value in having that, and maybe that's, like, Broadway theater, and, like, that's that concept, finite, distilled down, easy to communicate about by using those two words together.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if now we're moving past that, like, do we need a new word? Like, should a new word capture this broader concept, this broader idea, and we leave the old word to continue to capture that sort of sense of time and place that is what we're now leaving behind? It's like, cool, that was the past, this is the future. And I think it gets really complicated and mixed up with, like, is there potential financial upside to being able to call certain things theater? And, like, I think, of course, yes. And yeah, there is, like, maybe in-group, out-group again. Like, the in-group has the power of the concept of theater and the marketability of that concept and the cultural connection to it, and therefore desire to see it and or pay for it. So if you and I can use that word, does it make our lives easier in getting people to join our live theatrical performances that aren't traditionally covered under the scope of the concept of theater?
Yeah. And so just to, like, bring everybody into this conversation, I think, like, not that this is definitive, this is what we got to in 15 minutes of talking about this on Clubhouse, but I thought it was really interesting. We got to it. It is about the gathering of people to watch it, which I actually think is kind of indisputable, because the first use of the word theater was for the structure, the place that we all come to together, the theater, right? So that makes a ton of sense to me, that we gather together to watch one thing. That it's live was another thing that everyone kind of agreed on. And the one thing we didn't talk about, but I think is pretty inherent in the word theater as a art form, is dramaticness, inherent dramatic nature of the presentation, right? Not dramatic as in serious, but dramatic as in drama, right? Like, there is a story arc, right? Which is one of the reasons that I think, like, I like, for us, the live theatrical event that we create or experience that we create around the piece of theater, maybe, you know what I mean? Or film or whatever it is that we're putting on the stage because we don't have that element of drama, right? Because what we do is so inherently internet-based. When we do the show part of what we do, it's an internet-based. It's give people their own voices, let people get on screen and make the magic in real time that's live and you don't know what's going to happen, right? Whereas with theater, it's very specifically scripted or improvised with bullets, you know what I mean? So I think that's the other thing we didn't talk about today that I think has to go part and parcel with theater.
It's so funny to try and like distill down something that is fairly intangible, like the concept of theater or like dance. I feel like there's like a common sort of joke or trope inside of dance. Like, what is dance? Can you define it? What isn't dance? If you can define dance, then what falls outside of that? Mm-hmm. And it also makes me think of the American experimental musician composer, John Cage, who basically was like, I'm just going to take the definition of music and like try to break it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take all those things that you just said are music, God. Or in this instance, are theater. And I'm going to make you look at my work and tell me it's not music, even though I very consciously break your rules. And his brilliant, I think it's 4:33 is the name of the track, the song, the thing. It's just 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence.
Yeah.
He's like, is this music? It's literally silence. I'm like, how, you know, subversive is that? Is there anyone in the theater trying to do that sort of a thing?
Oh, like, God, yes.
Actively like breaking the concept of the definition of theater?
Totally.
And, like, I'm stuck in the three bullets that you just threw out before. But I'm going to do something that's not live. That's like very consciously like asynchronous, and like the audience is interacting at a different time scale than the performance itself, or things like that are like consciously going against the grain of what some sort of gatekeeper, what some sort of in-group is defining as theater.
I mean, there's such a long, oh my God, now I want to just like put a calendar day on our calendar to like introduce you to Antonin Artaud. And I mean, Jean-Paul Sartre with existentialism and like, yeah, this is all it is a new generation trying to break what it means of theater. Right. But it is almost always classified as avant-garde, like John Cage. Right. Antonin Artaud is horrifying, by the way. He's like a huge inspiration. So don't judge me. Yes, although something you just said makes me think that, like, I think the live consumption together is the thing that breaks it, where it's not theater, like, or where people who are experimenting with that form are not theater art. They're like usually starting to branch into the interdisciplinary, right? Like, world. This is really interesting. And I'm sure I'm wrong. And I'm sure there are things I don't know about, right? Clearly.
Tweet at us.
I know.
At BWI Unlocked. Use the hashtag TechTheaterCH to tell us we're wrong.
So back to my original question, too.
I totally forgot the original question. So please refresh my memory.
Can you help me understand? Because I feel really, I just don't understand the fixation or the territorialism, like, and I, when I say this, that's not a turn of speech. Like, I truly cannot understand the territorialism, like the need to fight over a word. Like, I'm such a you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, who cares if you don't call it theater? That just has no impact on what I'm doing. And I was wondering, can you help me understand, please, Joe?
I have no idea if I can.
Oh, crap.
I'm like currently running around in my own mind being like, what do I even think of that like territorial nature? And like, do I have things that I defend kind of like thoughtlessly or aimlessly or just because of habit? Because that's what it feels like to me, is it's either on one side, like somehow financially incentivized given the structure of our country and our global capitalistic society. Whereas like there is money connected to the defense of and the use of a word or a term or a concept. You know, it's almost like the manufacturing of diamonds and how there's like restrictions on the supply of diamonds so that the price won't be driven down by the fact that there probably are many more diamonds.
Commoditized, right?
Yeah. So like, it's probably one part that, right? Like keep it exclusive to therefore keep it expensive to therefore continue these, you know, the five families making the monies.
It's been a while. There they are.
So that's like one side I think is probably associated. And then the other side is like defending the thing to defend the thing to defend the thing. Like almost like it's like connected to identity. Where it's like, well, this is my perception of what theater is. And I am a bastion of or a gatekeeper inside of the concept of theater. And I'm going to fight and defend it because it's who I am. And it's this definition of theater like kind of connects directly to how I feel about myself as a representative of that space.
But the only possible negative outcome, like the reason to defend it, right, would be I don't understand this other version of theater, therefore it will make me irrelevant, right? Like, is there...
I guess. I don't know. I don't know if it goes anywhere past just I identify with this definition of theater and therefore must defend it. Like, I don't know. Oh. Like, I'm sure there's other connections, but does it need to go past just defending one's own identity?
Yeah, because that's where I get lost too, because I'm like, I didn't lose any part of myself just because I'm, a, you know, incredibly accomplished theater in the way we did understand it, maker, and also like now I'm like theater plus internet equals me, you know?
Yeah. And Tony, this feels like it ties back to me, like when you might get into an argument with someone who is, you know, defensive of a word changing definitions or opening up to include other definitions or maybe even pronunciations of words, and how like I am friends with and know many people that will like just fight you tooth and nail on the principle of the
oh,
word
for sure. Yeah.
being either used the way that it had been or pronounced the way that it is or isn't. And like, it feels like they fight just to fight because like part of their identity is defending that thing. And, you know, they have all of their other reasons behind why, you know, oh, it's the dictionary definition. Oh, the classics. Oh, the this. Oh, the that. Mm-hmm. But it feels when I'm in those conversations, because I usually take the other side of those arguments, it feels like they're arguing for the sake of arguing. And I'm kind of doing the same thing from my own side. Like it ties to a bit of my identity and the feeling that we should be open to the evolution of language and the different use cases and letting it breathe and grow and breed.
I will say that's one of the things that I appreciate and why I watch the Twitter threads on this so often, is that even if I agree with, of course, like I know so many people who just argue to argue, but the response in particular from this Jared guy, who I'm sure we'll have on the podcast, so don't kill us that we called you that Jared guy that one time, it's just I don't know you yet, is they're so thoughtful and they're so precise and they're so inclusive and they're so curious. That it I think his responses do a lot of work to start sowing the seeds of a wider definition, right? Because he's clearly not arguing just, well, at least my perception of it is he's not arguing just to be arguing. And like, he's doing a ton of fucking legwork that like a person like me doesn't have the patience for, you know what I mean? Like there's an ecosystem and a place for both of us. And I'm the one who's going to show you. I don't have time to like have an argument you don't want to listen to, you know, like just not me. But he is an inverse of me in a lot of ways, although he's an incredible maker of really, truly digital theater. Right. Like not what we do, but like, what does it mean to make theater with the internet tools? But as a sort of like person who's pushing back on Twitter, I think he's doing a lot of legwork to get people to start opening up their minds or at least consider that there's a wider world out there.
I love that. And thank you to Jared. We can't wait to have you on our show. But also I love keeping with the theme of sort of, this one's probably better informed than many past instances of what we do on this podcast, which is to just kind of guess at what people are thinking based on our limited experience with what they have done. But you've actually read quite a bit of what he's been writing.
I have,
and his writing is what he is thinking. So I'm guessing you're closer than what we have been in the past when we estimate or guesstimate how people are running their businesses or things like that. I was trying to connect through to the ASL conversation that we had. Which is someone like a Jared who does put in that legwork. He is doing the hard part, like you said. It's so much easier to just latch onto or glom onto the word theater and be like, hi, people know what they think of this, positively or negatively. Like it has a cultural definition. And so you can use it to describe your thing, hopefully in a positive way, and get people to buy into it, or at least like they have a starting point for understanding what you're doing. Mm-hmm. He's doing the very hard work of either redefining the term theater, extremely hard,
definitely,
and people fighting him, or creating a new concept and with many more words and concepts and examples, defining what that new thing is. Mm-hmm. And like that legwork and having to explain that to people and give them visceral examples of it and answering their questions and correcting, you know, things that fall outside of his perception of what this new concept is and defining it. Like, it's so difficult. And I think that's part of why people defend the old concept and other people don't want to invent a new concept, because you have to get everyone on the same fucking page as to what it is.
We're like living proof of that, right? It's like, so we were just talking about this today at our company because we're about to do the show. We're like, okay, we finally have the chance to have, you know, however many people just experience what we do, feel it, see it with their own eyes, fill in their own blanks, which is like at the base of art, right? You kind of give people the sketch and then you fill in with your heart and your imagination and your brain the rest of it, because it's so fucking hard to explain what we're doing. And we run into it every time we have an investor meeting, every time we have a desk side with someone from the press. They're like, it's really curious to see, like, they'll put on to us what they know and understand of, like, yeah. So anyway, I'm just, whew, you just hit the heartstrings right there with that. It's fucking hard to try to define something new or create something new. How did that connect to the ASL conversation and news piece? Like,
so I was thinking about that amazing woman, Raven Sutton, who was the mm-hmm. featured inside of this New York Times piece that Jess was talking about earlier, and how she did the hard work. It's a little different because it's not defining a new category, but it is somebody is doing the work and then who benefits from the work. And so like Jared is doing all that work, and then there's going to be a whole group and class of people that are probably going to benefit from the trail he is helping to blaze.
Oh, so this is like the first to market syndrome sort of, right?
Yeah, a little. And like more specifically with Raven Sutton, like she spent her time and her energy translating the song WAP into American Sign Language. And then that was studied, co-opted, and used by other people. And I didn't actually get deep enough into the article to know if she was able to either own a piece of that intellectual property or somehow make money off it. I'm assuming not.
No, probably not.
And that like she really like loves these artists and loved this song and was excited to translate it and then like put it up there on the internet for other people to just enjoy as well, you know, just straight up onto YouTube. But then other people are now taking it and monetizing it or using it to grow their own careers. And it just felt like, oh, she did all the hard work of actually translating this thing, and like her emotional and physical connection to the song, the artist, the culture behind it, like is inside of that translation. And she only gets like, you know, whatever credit comes through this article, another, you know, the video itself being viewed. But like loses out on any of the stuff that comes out of it after the fact.
Yeah. And just, I mean, this is like walking away from the definition of theater conversation probably and shutting the door on that. But in this conversation, we were talking about this article. We also were speaking about that gal, Ms. Sutton, is a woman of color. And this gal who went viral is white. And if you don't know, and we're just new to learning this ourselves with our partners at Invest in Access, it's really important to to Angela, who runs Invest in Access, to match interpreters as closely in body type, cultural, race, like all of that good stuff as possible to the performer, which I think is really neat. And so this was like part of the discussion, right, is that Kelly wasn't matched, but Kelly's like the go-to interpreter for music and stuff. And so all that is to quickly align everyone for the add-on to what you just said, Joe, which is ostensibly, right, that what the article in the Times does really nicely, I think, is breaks down what was going through Ms. Sutton's mind when she said, oh, I want to figure out how to not only interpret WAP, but like embody this song. And that has so much to do with her, I imagine, like role as a Black woman and what she paid attention to and how she was taught. She talks in the article about like her body and the sexiness and the power of what that means, right? Like inside this art, music. And that's not something that like as a white woman, if I was an interpreter, would be like, ooh, I'm going to figure out the model for like all this cultural reference and influence and racial reference and influence. And so it makes it even like worse.
Yeah, it's like you or me or Kelly Curdy like couldn't have made Mm-mm. that translation. Mm-mm. Even if I had the skill set, I don't have the understanding
right.
to be able to do that. And I'm glad that she was featured in this New York Times article, but like, why wasn't she the one who was asked to be part of Lollapalooza and like right. all the other connections and underpinnings of yeah, how credit and then therefore money and all these other things are connected.
Which immediately makes me think of Tarana Burke. Like the, when you were just saying that, I was like, Tarana Burke, Tarana Burke, Tarana Burke, right? Like white women, Me Too happened. And then you're like, yo, this woman's been at this for a decade. Just so we're clear.
And actually, it also got me thinking to our conversation about Paul's company, of which I cannot remember the name. And I was hoping that you could help me. The one that helped choreographers.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It's the three
original words. Production.
There it is. The original production. What beautiful cadence. Lucy, you're the best. So the original production, helping choreographers to copyright their movements and their sequences. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about that and a company like that and the ability for someone like Ruben Sutton to, yeah, somehow copyright or claim some sort of intellectual ownership over that work that she did. Like she did that, like she interpreted mm-hmm. that song, translated it, and could be in theory like receiving some sort of credit, whether it be financial or just, you know, her name connected to the translation of it anytime it's done.
Which also then we was in this conversation goes back to that conversation and news piece we had about TikTok creator, black TikTok creators having their shit stolen and ripped off and like they don't benefit from that, but lots of white people are getting rich off of it because of the privilege and connections and everything else they have to the business of TikTok. And oh yeah, oh boy.
Oh boy. It also feels like there's something so similar to this about, I feel like there's a trend or a theme in culture, like with news specifically, that like a tweet, we'll use as an example, like a big headline grabbing tweet that's, you know, not necessarily factual, gets lots and lots of activity, engagement, shares, likes, comments, etc. And then the correction to that tweet saying, hey, that was actually false or incorrect or somehow misleading, gets, you know, a fraction of that same mm-hmm. engagement.
But that's the Emily thing she was talking about, right? What were the affirmation bias, confirmation bias, and I forgot what the third one was she was talking about today. But I think those are actually directly connected to that.
Yeah, but just the idea that like there's like a sensational connection to a thing that goes, you know, let's call it going viral. It's not really that. In the same way that like Kelly Curdy went viral through her interpretation of WAP at Lollapalooza, everyone like lost their minds about that. But very, very few people then trickled down and read this New York Times article or learned about the existence of Raven Sutton, who actually did the hard work of actually translating it.
Don't you think that has a lot to do with inside our company? Newsflash, we got word last week that perhaps Kelly was going to be one of our interpreters on Freestyle Love Supreme. And like, for us, like, what a thing, right? Because we're just like, we just want anything that raises the visibility, right? A Freestyle Love Supreme Academy, the women that we're serving, the art form we're creating by bringing people together live. And that's like a really exciting moment for us, right? Like, holy shit, this woman went viral. She was incredible. We didn't know any of this backstory about Miss Sutton. And, you know, for us, we just got an email today and really stand behind this. Angela was like, I don't think this is the right time, the right context. It doesn't serve like the why we're here and what we're doing with accessibility. And, you know, so like we found someone who is the appropriate interpreter for the person that Kelly was originally matched with in our Freestyle Love Supreme show. And it's there's a musical theater song called A Quiet Thing, right? It's a quiet thing. Like, it won't be splashy. It won't be exciting. It won't go viral, but it's a thing that matters. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Right? That correction on Twitter is the thing that matters, or a thing that matters. And it's just never the thing that like creates the big, no one's like, holy shit, they did a thing that matters. Oh man. Well, this was a really fun conversation on Clubhouse this week. And I thought it was really cool to get to talk to SJ a little bit from iHeart, especially about like some of the Broadway grosses. I love the people who stop in each week to Clubhouse, and that could be you.
That could be you. You could pop in to our show. You don't have to stay the whole hour. Just come hang. But even if you don't show up, which we think you should, we still want to hear what you think. We want to hear what you think of this conversation. And then hopefully you'll come join the other conversations, because these conversations only keep going around and around and around if you join us. So hit us up either at Clubhouse, 1255 Eastern, or on Twitter. We're at BWI Unlocked. Tech Theater CH is the hashtag. I stole Chess's line. I didn't realize it.
If you'd like to join the Broadway Unlocked family, you can also host a show in our club. Visit broadwayunlocked.com/ch where you can pitch your ideas to me as a robot. We'll see what she says.
Every topic we've talked about has been inspired by the articles we read and the people on our stage. So please tweet at us, use that hashtag TechTheaterCH, slide into our DMs, which is a thing I hate saying, and join us in these conversations. But until then, we'll see you next week.
Bye, y'all.